This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. There are some oddities in this year's Bloomington and Normal elections, including a whole lot of money.
I don't think I've seen this high of a dollar amounts get thrown around as much as I have before this election.
And find out more about expected endorsements that didn't happen, odd political bedfellows, and a political action committee that avoids those on the wings. Plus, there are two camps of candidates for Normal Town Council and their opinions on creating pandemic relief moving forward. One set blasts past enforcement actions. The other points to fee waivers, small business loans, and housing assistance. And doctors are still in concert for the Children's Discovery Museum just through a Zoom tube. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. A McLean County government panel doesn't want the county to help fund a drop-off recycling program. The County Board Land Use Committee rejected a cost-sharing agreement with Bloomington and Normal. The county would have paid $65,000 in the first year. Committee member William Friedrich says he doesn't believe rural residents use the drop boxes and the smaller communities pay for their own recycling.
All the cities, towns, and villages within the county are doing their part, and I just don't think we should blanket everybody with this.
The two Democrats on the committee, Leah Klein and Elizabeth Johnston, voted to support the recycling program, saying out-of-towners do in fact use the recycling bins. Johnston says the 38 cents per year each resident would have to pay for the service was reasonable. McLean County reports two more COVID-related deaths. Weekly coronavirus cases are at a three-month high. County Health Department spokesperson Marianne Manco calls for people to follow the public health guidelines if they plan to be around large gatherings this Easter weekend.
We just don't want people to take the risks that they have been taking, and we have lately been seeing a relaxed attitude about these risks, and now is not the time for that.
The deaths were a man in his 80s and a man in his 90s. 38 McLean County residents are hospitalized with COVID. That's the county's highest total in nearly 3 months. It marks the 10th straight day the county has increased hospitalizations and signals the county is failing one of the metrics used to decide whether the county stays in Phase 4 mitigations. Statewide, Thursday marked the highest one-day tally of new cases since February 5th. McLean County has had 432 new cases of COVID in the last week, and there are now more than 500 people isolating at home. 25,000 McLean County residents are now fully vaccinated. Country Financial is reassuring clients their life insurance policies are safe, regardless whether they have contracted COVID or get the vaccine. Country has seen an increase in calls after false information circulating on social media alleged insurers would deny claims for those affected by COVID. Eric LePan is a Country agent in Bloomington.
Overall, insurance companies might get a bad rap as being, you know, these evil, nefarious companies that are always out to take your money and not give you anything. But when it comes down to a life policy, like I said, it's a legal contract.
LePan says the terms of the policy can't be changed after the fact. He says most insurers have a contestability period for the first 2 years of a policy, but there is not a specific COVID exclusion. Country has paid out claims to victims of COVID-19. One Greek organization at ISU hopes to help grant the wishes of children with critical illnesses despite obstacles caused by the pandemic. Chi Omega will host the 45th annual March Madness Dance Competition April 11th to raise money for Make-A-Wish Illinois. Make-A-Wish Chair Tricia Fisher says the group raised over $55,000 from last year's event that was canceled due to the pandemic, so this year's virtual event brings hope despite the change.
We do have the opportunity to reach a larger audience outside of the Bloomington Normal area, but it's very different, a lot of new challenges, but we're adjusting, and I think it's a good experience for everyone.
The event will be filmed at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts and posted on the Chi Omega website at 5 p.m. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA continues its educational video series, Hear My Story, with local patient Robert Handley.
The providers at Bloomington Normal Audiology are all doctors of audiology. They have gone that next step, so they're medical professionals.
Robert's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media. The pandemic has limited the personal contact that is typically the foundation of Bloomington Normal City Council elections. That's been partially replaced by a barrage of social media ads and campaign mailers funded by unusually large campaign contributions from outside groups. And candidates themselves are bunching up in larger ideology-driven slates than we've seen recently. Ryan Denham has this look at the race that was.
The sense among those interviewed by WGLT is that there is simply more at stake. Here's Joseph Zampetti, an Illinois State University professor and expert in political communication.
It's kind of fascinating to see how seriously some groups and some individuals are taking this election.
One indicator is the money. Sure, it's always cost money to run for city council, typically several thousand dollars, a bit more for mayoral runs, but this cycle has attracted multiple five-figure contributions to council-level candidates. That's unusual for Bloomington Normal. The union that represents Bloomington police officers gave nearly $12,000 each to council candidates Nick Becker and Sheila Montney. Records show that Jeff Tinnervin and his apartment management company, First Sight, gave Normal council candidate Scott Preston $10,000 for his reelection bid. And the Illinois Realtors has done at least $12,000 in mailings this month for Preston, fellow Normal candidate Kevin McCarthy, and Mayor Chris Coos.
I don't think I've seen this high of a dollar amounts get thrown around as much as I have before this election.
That's Justin Boyd, who is campaign manager for Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner's successful 2017 reelection.
You know, in the case of Montney and Becker with almost 12 or almost 13,000, whatever it was, for a ward race, I mean, your 200 votes are going to win that race.
He says it's unprecedented, but that doesn't make it necessarily bad.
It shows that there are people paying attention to local politics, and that's exciting. They see that there's actually the people that are closest to them are the ones that are going to have the most impact on them.
So why are they paying attention? Well, in Bloomington, police-backed Sheila Montney and Nick Becker are facing Willie Holton Halbert and Patrick Lawler, respectively. Halbert and Lawler are part of the Progressive People First Coalition, guided by Bloomington City Council member Jen Carrillo. Carrillo, in turn, has been a vocal proponent of police reforms and the defund the police concept. In Normal, the Illinois Realtors are active in a race where Rivian has been a key issue. Campaign ads for incumbents Chris Coos, Kevin McCarthy, and Scott Preston prominently feature their support for the incentives that help land Rivian. Coos has criticized his opponent, Mark Tiratilli, for his criticism of the deal. Rivian is now nearing 1,000 local employees, a hiring surge that's bolstered the local housing market. So is that why Illinois Realtors are now supporting Coos, McCarthy, and Preston? Well, a spokesperson for the Illinois Realtors wouldn't say for sure. He says they support candidates who champion home ownership, consumer protections, and private property rights. The Illinois Realtors Fund paid for many of the mailers hitting Normal mailboxes in recent weeks. The Realtors also did over $17,000 in mailings for Bloomington mayoral candidate Mboka Milamwe, who faces Jackie Gunderson and Mike Straza. Turns out mailers are a pretty good way of reaching people during a pandemic that has stripped away events like the Uptown Normal St. Patrick's Day Parade. That's according to Eric Rankin, a former chair of the McLean County Democrats who also works in Illinois State University's Department of Politics and Government.
We've had a massive resurgence of mail pieces being very vital because it's one of the ways that you can reach out. I mean, I think I had, in 1 week at home, I had two mailers from Scraza, two mailers from Boca, one mailer from Jackie. Like, I was getting a fair number of pieces of mail.
Other groups, while not new, are still very much in the game. That includes the McLean County Chamber of Commerce's Political Action Committee, which endorses candidates based on their responses to a questionnaire and interview. This year, the Chamber PAC endorsed Mike Straza for Bloomington Mayor, noting his background as an entrepreneur and business consultant.
We felt that Mike had a better handle on, in general, what our, goal is.
That's real estate agent Megan O'Neill Rogozinski, chair of the Chamber PAC's board. She says Jackie Gunderson did not submit her questionnaire responses in time to be considered. As for Mel Lamwe,
he didn't really seem to understand any of the business issues at hand, which, given his years on the council, was a little bit disappointing.
Notably, the Chamber PAC did not endorse in the normal mayoral race. Chris Coos is a small business owner himself and a member of the Chamber.
In the most recent years, though, his policies have been more narrowly focused. I think there's a little bit of that tunnel vision that occurs the longer a person holds office. There seems to be a lack of true understanding of what's occurring within the community. A community speaks and the city doesn't always, or the town doesn't always listen.
So why didn't the Chamber PAC just endorse Mark Tiratilli then?
Mr. Tiratilli didn't necessarily have the understanding that we were hoping for. He might be there in the future, but he wasn't there yet.
In past cycles, city council candidates only really did a few different cattle calls, the Chamber PAC and the laborers, for example. But this cycle, two new political action committees have formed and endorsed candidates. One is Responsible Cities PAC, which spurns anyone on the ideological extremes. It sent voters a list of its endorsements. Conservative-leaning Common Sense PAC has actually doled out money. It's not uncommon for PACs from outside Bloomington Normal to inject money into local races. Outgoing Mayor Terry Renner says he's benefited from that in past races.
But to have them primarily locally, local PACs and local slating, that is absolutely something new.
Another novel element this year is that so many candidates are running as an informal slate or formal coalition. Bloomington mayoral candidate Jackie Gunderson is running alongside three council candidates in the People First Coalition, which aims to elect a progressive majority to the city council. They're sharing branded marketing materials and campaigning together, and they evenly split donations that come in online. In Normal, several anti-establishment, more conservative candidates have banded together to run for the three open seats alongside Mark Tiratilli. They are Steve Harsh, David Paul Blumenschein, and Carl Sela. They're also allied with Stan Nord, who was elected in 2019. Eric Rankin says he likes the strategy.
This is what nonpartisan elections should have been doing long ago. When there is no real party support for a specific person, then candidates that are like-minded should join together and basically not try and reinvent the wheel. They're all speaking from a similar mindset. They're all talking about the same issues.
But it could backfire, he says, if one of the candidates in a slate does something questionable, and that impacts everyone else. David Paul Blumenschein, for example, has faced criticism for leading a conservative talk radio station's bus trip to Washington for the pro-Trump Stop the Steal rally that later turned into a full-fledged deadly assault on the Capitol. Blumenschein has not answered WGLT's questions about that incident, but he told ISU student radio station WZND that he was not involved in violence and condemns anyone who broke the law on January 6th.
I came on my radio program at Cities 92.9 on a Sunday, the Sunday after January 6th, and condemned anyone who broke the law. We are not a nation of lawbreakers. We are a nation of law keepers.
Eric Rankin has a theory that former President Donald Trump engaged a fringe element of society that's now eyeing local elected office from a perspective outside of contemporary mainstream municipal thought. It's unclear how that will translate into the business of city government, where history points to issue-by-issue problem-solving outside the confines of a single ideology.
Most people that ran for municipal office didn't typically run for deeply partisan issues or cultural issues. They ran, because they typically wanted to make a difference. They thought they could help in certain areas. Now what has happened is that, Trump has kind of opened Pandora's box. And we have a lot of people who now believe that the way to continue his legacy is to run for public office.
One of Chris Coos's recent mailers tries to tie Mark Tiratilli to Trump. With pictures of the two men plus David Paul Blumenschein, It reads, "Our country barely survived 4 years of Trump. Normal can't risk 4 years of Mark Tirotilli." Tirotilli laughed off that comparison in a recent Facebook video.
"I'm an independent, okay? I voted Libertarian in the national election."
Indeed, city council races are technically nonpartisan. There's no D or R or L next to the names on the ballot. Regardless, the McLean County Republican Party has been engaged in this and past council elections, including hosting candidate forums. That's been a priority for local party chair Connie Beard since she took over in 2018. In a recent email blast, the McLean County GOP encouraged its members to vote for its preferred candidates based on their past, quote, solid Republican voting records. That includes Mike Straza and Mark Tirotilli. Proof of just how wild local elections can be, look no further than that three-way Bloomington mayoral race between Straza, Gunderson, and Milamwe. Straza's coalition of support includes the McLean County GOP, the Chamber of Commerce, the local laborers' union, and both the Responsible Cities and Common Sense PACs. Milamwe, with his focus on core services and restraint, is seemingly the preferred candidate of those further to the ideological right. Milamwe has been endorsed by Stan Nord in Normal, and his campaign team includes former McLean County GLP chair Chuck Erickson. That's despite Milamwe's past support for Democrats and a reluctance to be categorized along party lines. Here's Eric Rankin.
While Jackie is, you know, really shallow in terms of political experience, if she can turn out her voters, she may actually pull this off if Boca and Straza end up splitting their vote.
The election is April 6th, when all the noise surrounding social media posts, yard signs, and letters to the editor fade away and winners emerge.
It's a good thing I'm not a betting person, because I'm certain I'd lose this. I have no idea how to handicap it.
Early voting is now underway, so go and vote. I'm Ryan Denham.
Learn more from our voter guide at wglt.org/election. This is Sound Ideas. Normal Town Council candidates turn the question of pandemic recovery efforts into a litmus test on the past response to the pandemic, but don't say much about what's next. The town has already done some things to aid pandemic recovery. It has used federal community development block grant money for two rounds of housing assistance grants. It's given $500,000 in forgivable loans and grants to small businesses, again as a federal pass-through. Incumbent Kevin McCarthy says that shows positive attention to the issue.
The town has been very successful at going out and bringing tax dollars back to help out our local businesses and our residents.
All candidates are notably silent about what the town can do moving forward that is new to help the community recover from the pandemic. Indeed, incumbent Kimberly Cummings says there are fiscal limits.
To be honest, I don't think there really is. We are already working on kind of a tight budget due to our losses because of pandemic. So I do think we will end up having to rely on federal and state level assistance.
As with most issues this election cycle, there are two well-defined blocks of candidates in the answer to how the town should shape pandemic relief going forward. The block, consisting of Donna Toney, Steve Harsh, and Carl Sela, criticizes the response to the pandemic so far and characterizes future efforts as what not to do rather than specific action going forward. Here's Carl Sela.
The main thing the town needs to do is get out of the way, kind of like the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm.
Sela's block of candidates thinks the town should not have cracked down on certain businesses who made a point of disobeying the governor's executive order banning indoor service during COVID case surges.
The town going in and shutting them down without input from the health department, the town fining them for political reasons, all of that is getting in the way as opposed to facilitating recovery.
Sela says people should be able to live for themselves and make their own decisions. Candidate Steve Harsh also disagrees with town action to support state action to preserve public health.
Allow every business to be open and operate under their under their own control.
Regardless of the governor's executive order?
Regardless, if the governor wants every business shut down, then let the governor come shut down every business.
The fourth candidate in that group, David Paul Blumenschein, has not responded to WGLT requests for interviews, though he is known to be a government minimalist. The other block of candidates tends to emphasize actions such as suspending liquor license fees for a year. Here's Planning Commission Chair and Council Candidate A.J. Zimmerman.
Allowing to-go liquor sales or to increase the outdoor seating so that they can get to some level of capacity.
Incumbent Normal Council Member Scott Preston acknowledges the liquor license fee waiver is a small bite move, but says it should not be discounted.
We are providing some kind of relief and some kind of acknowledgement of, hey, at least we hope this helps you guys as you've gone through a tough year, recognizing that they had already paid all those fees for 2020 before the pandemic even came about.
Preston and incumbent Kevin McCarthy say the liquor license fees may be only about $3,000, but that's big enough to mean something right now. McCarthy says the waiver is also an example of creativity the council must have when new possibilities come.
We don't have a ton of money to give away. Okay, we can forego some liquor license fees for a year. Maybe we can do that for two, depends on how that goes on. But we have to be able to identify the most pressing needs and then be creative about what we can do to help give them relief. And that means we have to have a good conversation going on.
And candidate Brad McMillan says that conversation should include being alert and responsive to future federal pass-through opportunities as well.
This new round of federal money that's going to come from Washington, D.C. has a restaurant bar component to it. It should help them hopefully get to the point, you know, that they can survive until we finally turn the corner.
All candidates acknowledge the road to recovery will be long. I'm Charlie Schlenker. You're listening to 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. It's been more than a year since the Children's Discovery Museum closed its doors just weeks before it was set to hold its 16th annual Doctors in Concert benefit. Correspondent Brianna Groh has more on how the museum has turned pandemic lemons into fundraising lemonade with this WGLT datebook.
Now, with a potential reopening date on the horizon, the physician musicians are gearing up for an encore virtual performance at 6 p.m. Saturday, April 17th. But Museum Executive Director Beth Wissman says even after the return of in-person events, the concert will still include an online experience. Wissman says the museum's first crack at a virtual Doctors in Concert back in September was also its most successful.
We raised more money last year than we've ever raised before with this event.
It turned out taking the event online wasn't that hard.
You know, we have very talented physicians. They practiced all year for this event. They really wanted to do it. And so once we really set up the technology to be able to capture the performances, that part was actually pretty easy.
The new format also meant a lot of the barriers to attending an in-person performance no longer applied.
And then we heard from a lot of museum families that had told us in the past they've never been able to attend the event because, you know, they had babysitting issues or they didn't think their kids would sit through a concert in a fancy setting.
Now families can attend Doctors in Concert right from their living rooms. No fancy attire required. A lifelong pianist, Dr. Susan Shepherd has performed at every single Doctors in Concert, and her granddaughter has attended them all, too.
So last year, we decided, since that was her last year, that she'd be able to attend the recital as she would be going out of the country for university. Then we decided that we would do a duet, cello and piano duet.
Thanks to the live stream broadcast, her granddaughter will still be able to watch Shepherd play. You might expect physician musicians would be a rare breed, but Shepherd says it's actually pretty common.
You know, there's the science of medicine, but there's also the art of medicine. So there's a lot of us have an artistic side as well. So it's not unusual for people in the medical field to also have a musical ability.
She says playing the piano is also a great stress reliever, especially during the pandemic.
At the end of the day, to go home and be able to sit down and play and express that side of me, then that is a good balance.
Shepherd says she'll be performing two pieces on April 17th, including Ivan Sings by Russian composer Aram Khachaturian. The second piece, though, will be a surprise.
Because if people want to know, they have to tune in.
Wissman says that's not uncommon at Doctors in Concert.
Every once in a while, a doctor will surprise us. We often have surprises. The doctors will practice something and not tell us, and they'll perform a song, a dance, a comedy routine. I mean, you never really know exactly what you're going to get from a few of our doctors who've been with us for a long time.
Wisman does know there'll be a Spanish guitar, jazz violin, and vocal performance in the mix. The event also includes a silent auction. Online bidding opens April 9th. The money raised last year helped fund the new Healthy Me exhibit that's ready to go for the museum's tentative reopening in May. This year, proceeds from the concert will help launch Prescription for Play, a pilot program to expand access to the museum for kids and families who can benefit from the power of play. Wisman says the pandemic highlighted the importance of physical play and what happens when kids don't get enough activity.
We had a lot of kids that had plenty of access to screens and computers and video games during the COVID period. And we know that that wasn't enough, you know, that actually has a consequence.
Through the program, participating pediatricians will screen patients to identify any red flags in kids' physical, mental, or emotional development that could be addressed through more play.
The doctor can give a literal prescription, write it out, and what it basically entails is free access for that entire family to come to the Children's Discovery Museum and play together.
Wisman hopes it won't be long before that's possible again. The 17th annual Doctors in Concert will be broadcast live from the Children's Discovery Museum, 6 p.m. Saturday, April 17th. I'm Brianna Groh.
Tickets and sponsorship opportunities for Doctors in Concert are available through the Children's Discovery Museum website. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.